Hi, everyone. Welcome to Nancy's Metaphysical World and More. My name is Nancy, and I host the show. And today, I have another super good guest. His name is Michael Patrick Bovines, and he is a meditation consultant, author, inspirational writer, and metaphysical teacher. So, Michael, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Nancy. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, it's actually my pleasure after looking over all the info that you have here. But, Michael, let's do this. So that the people who are listening can know a little bit about who you are, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and kind of what made you start, you know, developing what you're doing?
Oh, certainly. While it was very organic the way it started, you know, as a kid, 16, 17, I was always curious about the mind and always probably out of my own issues of shame and powerlessness, wanted to explore my inner power to figure out a way to, you know, cope with high school and understanding myself a little bit better. You know, I didn't have any of the major kind of life-changing experiences. I didn't die and come back to life with all the wisdom and secrets of the universe. But what I did do is I had a lot of shame and a lot of issues that were painful for me. And that kind of prompted my own personal growth. And in through it, I found a lot of resources, primarily learning to meditate. I was in high school at the time, and I took a course on meditation. And it helped me tremendously understand myself and connect with my own inner power. And as I discovered that, you know, again, for very selfish reasons, for my own personal healing and understanding, I realized I started helping other friends, you know, that I was naturally people were drawn to me with issues and problems that had to deal with a lack of understanding in themselves. So I would start to share what I've learned. And through the process, through the meditation, I connected with a part of myself that can only be described as my soul. And through that conscious relationship over the years, it kind of guided me to where I am today. And like I said, very organically, process of becoming wasn't something I set out to do. And an example of that would be when I learned to meditate, there was a family member, a distant family member that came down with a life-challenging illness, and he had started going to a support group. Well, I taught him how to meditate to deal with the stress, and then he asked if I would come and talk to the group, the support group, and I thought, well, I can, you know, teach them to meditate as well. And I started going on Tuesday nights and offering guided meditation. And people then, you know, it started on a Tuesday night regularly that I was doing a guided meditation. And people there were unable to make it perhaps the next week or something like that. So they asked me if I would record the meditation because they didn't want to miss it. And I thought, well, yeah, sure, I can do that. So I started to produce meditation tapes without even really planning on doing that for a living, so to speak. It just kind of happened, you know, serving the needs of others, and they became popular. And in the 90s, primarily, is when I started that, and they, you know, were sold in bookstores around the country, and it just kind of organically happened. It wasn't something I really, like, had a big goal to make happen in the beginning days, you know, back in the 90s. Now I'm obviously very conscious of what I'm doing, and I'm helping people take their lives to a new level.
See, Michael, I think it's real important with your first statement that you made, because a lot of people think that you have to have this thing happen to you in order to create, you know, your inner wisdom or your psychic ability. And that's really not true, because everybody has it. Some people go through different things, like, you know, I did, but that doesn't mean everybody has to, you know, and you still can come out with the same knowledge and the same wisdom without having a traumatic accident or something profound going on.
Right.
So I think it's important, Michael, that the normal everyday people, as we call them, you know, not that they are, I mean, we're just as normal, but they understand that we're not anything above them, that they
special,
actually have
right.
the same abilities if they just look for it and if they would just open up. It's there for kind of the taking. Would you find that to be true?
Oh, absolutely. And that's a big part of my teaching is, you know, you don't have to be abducted by aliens. You don't have to have some kind of major experience to know that you have power. You know, this inner power we have has been, of our soul and our spirituality, has been kind of sanctioned by the church for so many, you know, centuries, that you had to go through this superior person who had a connection with God. And so much of my message is that, you know, it's time for us to evolve to the point where we have our own personal private relationship with God. To me, that's what our spirituality is. And the more we can honor that and understand the nature of ourself, yeah, anyone has that ability. And it's even, I think, more powerful for people to realize that because, you know, the ego in us feels so inadequate. You know, it feels like it's not good enough. And that's true. The ego isn't good enough. But that's not all of who you are. You also have a soul and spirit that is more than enough to create your dreams and to fulfill your destiny. And most people don't understand the difference or have denied their soul and spirit. And so a big part of what I teach is how to reclaim that power, how to understand the very practical relationship that you can develop with this part of you that's more than eager to help empower your life. And, yeah, I totally agree that you know, we read the books and there's wonderful ways of getting there, and certain things do happen, and it's valuable, you know, regardless of your experience. But for the major part of people thinking that they can't grow spiritually or that they don't have anything special about them, you know, I try to help them to understand that that's not true at all.
Mm-hmm. A lot of times when I'm doing my coaching, because I do life coaching, people want to know, you know, why they're here. What's the reason why they have to be here? And because of a lot of the books that are out there, and there's nothing against the books that are out there because they're all pretty good. Some are very good. But people think that they have to do something special in order to, you know, allow themselves to be okay with themselves. And I try to tell them all the time, you know, you can reach whatever height, level you want to call it, just by trying. You know, people come here, yes, there are certain people who probably come here for very special reasons, but not everybody has that special reason. Maybe it's to learn some things from your past lives that you didn't quite get, and now you're going to be prompted to do it now. You know, so when you talk about the ego, you know, versus the spirit and the soul, I do think people get those a little confused. Mm-hmm. And it's important to know that they're not really one of the same. In fact, if you stay with spirit and soul, you're much better off than most of the time being with ego.
Absolutely, so. Yeah. One of the things that helped me a lot with understanding the ego, because, you know, a lot of old spiritual teachings was that you had to kill the ego, you had to get rid of it, you had to control it. And what I've discovered and what has helped me so much in my own healing process is it's, you know, love is the answer. Love is what the soul is all about. And the only way to really heal and mature, I call it maturing the ego, is through understanding. And that's what love does, is to seek to understand. And instead of trying to, you know, make it into an enemy within us, is you can understand the way the ego evolves. And one of the things that helped me and other people so much is that there's stages of the ego's development. You know, its purpose is to protect us. The ego is there to protect us, and it's to be a liaison between the outside world and our conscious self. And so it only takes in information from our five senses, you know, from the smell, sight, touch, taste. Mm-hmm. It pulls information, so it's limited to its resources. That's why it oftentimes, you know, denies spirituality, denies the metaphysical, doesn't understand it because you can't measure it as easily.
Mm-hmm.
But the first stage of the ego, as an infantile ego, its biggest concern is, am I getting enough? Am I getting enough love? Am I getting enough attention? Am I getting enough food? Am I getting enough warmth, you know, to protect itself? And then it matures as it realizes it's not the, you know, the center of the world. As an infant, it certainly is in its own right. But as it becomes a child and realizes there's brothers and sisters, there's, you know, classmates and kids, and then it shifts its focus from getting enough to competing and comparing. And it starts focusing its emphasis is, am I good enough? Am I good enough to be loved? Am I good enough to, you know, in my family and in my gender or whatever? It starts getting fixated on the issues of being good enough. And then it matures into adolescence and teenage years, and then it shifts again from, you know, getting enough to good enough to doing enough. Am I learning enough? Am I achieving enough? Am I growing enough? Am I doing? And that's all states and stages of an immature ego. Now, it's not immature when you are a child or when you are an adolescent, but as an adult, and most people get arrested in one of those states. You know, there can be a 70-year-old woman going through the Morrison's cafeteria concerned about getting the biggest piece of pie. You know? Mm-hmm. She's still about getting, am I getting enough, getting enough? And we can get locked into those stages when we don't understand it. But the adult stage, the healing and the mature stage is that I am enough, to come from a place where I am enough. Not better than, not superior to, but I am enough. I'm resourceful enough, I'm creative enough, I'm passionate enough, I'm lovable enough, I am enough. And that's a stage that I realize is tremendously healing for people when they can start to function and feel that. You know, intellectually you can say, yeah, I'm enough. But they don't necessarily feel that, you know, on the depth of their being. And when you can mature the ego to a place of being enough, then it can work in a relationship and partnership with your soul rather than against you. And to me, that's been tremendously healing so that, you know, the difference is when you're doing a creative project or you're starting a new job, you're not trying to get your value from those things. You're not trying to get a sense of purpose or power or value from my work or from my relationships or from my, I'm instead giving my value. I am enough, and I'm going to bring my value into my relationships. I'm going to bring my value into my work. I'm going to bring my value into life rather than trying to get it from life. And that's tremendously healing and empowering for people. But it's about understanding, you know, the ego is not bad. It's just trying to protect you, but it's limited in its resources. So anyways, that's something that, to me, I help a lot of people through solution sessions and through my teachings as well, to understand and to mature the ego, to mature it into a place of being enough. And and it's only enough when it can relate and work with your soul. It's not enough when it's on its own, you know. Truly, it isn't enough when you're trying to do it all from an ego perspective. So anyways, I just wanted to share that.
No, that's good, because again, I think the more people understand, you know, about the different facets that they're really going through and that they have within themselves, it is very, very important. Now, you talk about, and you've said it a couple times, your soul solutions. Let's talk about how you came up with that title.
Well, quite simply, you know, I thought and searched a lot when I was in high school and junior high and even beyond that into college days about trying to fix myself and reading all kinds of books and learning and taking yoga and, you know, learning about ESP and all the different fun topics that were there. Back then, it was like, you know, the occult section of Walden's bookstore. It wasn't even New Age or metaphysics, so I was always afraid that somebody from, you know, the local church would see me in the occult section. But as that certainly has changed the image around the mystery of life and the mysticism, I discovered that as I meditated and I had questions, that it started coming through me, through my meditations, through a part of me, this ancient wisdom within me that I can only describe as the soul. And so I learned slowly, you know, gradually to start trusting that, and that the answers are indeed found within us. And so the term solutions is that, you know, we seek oftentimes the answers outside of us. And the soul can work with bringing that through other people, you know, as you do in helping others. Their soul can help connect with your soul and bring that information through, absolutely. But it's also about realizing that I can also access that within myself. And so much of my teaching is to empower people into that process. And I find that the answers do lie within, and I came up with the term solutions about, 15 years ago. And I have it trademarked now, and it's the title of my book as well. But it's so important because it kind of speaks volumes, you know, that one word about what the answers are that we're seeking. They're found within the realm of our soul. And I help people to understand the soul and the spirit, and they're tremendously different. They're not the same. You know, church and religions in the past have kind of clumped them together, soul and spirit and soul. But they're very different energies, and they're very different means and ways of relating to them in a very practical level. And for instance, you know, the way to connect and understand and relate to your soul is a feminine energy. Mm-hmm. Your soul is through the feminine aspects of our consciousness is the way we bridge and connect with our soul. And the masculine energy of will and action, the masculine energy is a spirited energy. It's the connection with spirit. And likewise, that spirit connects to God, and the soul connects to the goddess, the divine feminine. And when people can understand that our chauvinism, you know, the world of chauvinism we live in, that says the masculine is better than the feminine, and it has eliminated the feminine in the God, in the religions, for the most part. You know, Catholicism throws in Mother Mary as a little token of feminine energy, of a God, divine being, but of course she's not the main emphasis. But the truth is that it's equally powerful and valuable, and the soul is through the feminine energy. The nature of our feminine energy is what helps us to connect with our soul, and that's been in crisis for a long time now in our world. And I help people to understand and bring balance to that. And the chauvinism is so subtle in our world. It's so subtle, but it's so damaging to people's power, you know. it's imbued, and I've often said this to people if they ask, you know, when I talk to about this issue, and I say, you know, everyone is a chauvinist until you choose, consciously choose not to be. Because we are born in a world that, from our religions to our language to everything, so inundated with chauvinism that you just are, you know, a part of it until you wake up and become conscious and consciously choose to step into a place of dominion and power. And so it's important to understand the relationship to your soul through healing your own personal chauvinism that says the masculine is better than the feminine, and then to equally value the qualities of feminine energy. You know, as an example, imagination, you know, is feminine energy. The imagination is that creative resource. But what do the majority of people think? You know, oh, it's just your imagination, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, that's no value. It's just, you know, it's not logic and reason and learning and memorizing that school teaches you. But yet the imagination is the birth canal of everything that exists. You know, you can't create anything without it first coming through your imagination, from the
mm-hmm.
clothes you're wearing to the telephone we're talking on to the house that you're in. Where did it all begin? Somebody had to imagine it. You know, it started there. And from that, of course, manifest it. But if you can't imagine yourself being different, you won't. You know, people talk about changing their self-image. Well, what does that mean? The way I imagine myself. How do I imagine me? Can I see myself as a non-smoker if I'm a smoker? Can I see myself at a certain weight? You know, so the imagination, again, is a portal to our soul, and is it one of our soul's ways it communicates to us. And it's been so, you know, devalued in our world. And as I teach people that, you know, we can choose to value that. We can choose to value our emotions and our feelings, which is feminine energy again. The power there is tremendous, but the world at large still holds that emotions are weak.
mm-hmm.
The emotional is weak, a weakness. So a big part of shedding new light and waking people up to the truth of the power of themselves through their soul, through their feminine energy, and balancing that is tremendously healing and empowering. And the world, I think, is ready. I think the world's ready to make that shift.
Yeah, I agree, and I think it's going to be very predominant as, you know, we get closer and through 2012, 2015.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a lot of times when you talk about imagination, I mean, I think because I have, you know, my 501c3 for kids called the Child's Miracle Mind, about them being on that medication for ADD and HD that shuts down that creative part. You know, and that creative part is very important, like you're just saying, because without it, you know, really, you're going to have a hard time figuring out really what's there, you know,
yeah.
and they shut this down in kids, and I go bonkers when I start talking about those things. But I'd like to talk a little bit about your book and where the listeners can get it. But first, before we do that, Michael, give out your website and
sure.
a way that they can get in touch with you.
Okay, the website that's the best way to reach me is through relaxationmeditations.com, and that is plural at the end. Relaxationmeditations.com is my website, and there's about 12 articles that I've written. Part of them, some of those articles will be expressed in the book, you know, expanded into greater detail. I'm doing teleclasses right now, which are, it's kind of interesting. I came up with this idea to write the book because I've been wanting to write a book forever, you know, but I realize I'm a speaker more so than I am a writer. And so I came up with the idea of doing a teleclass where I can speak on different topics and have it transcribed. And the really cool part is that, you know, a half hour of the teleclass is questions and answers from my listeners that are listening. And so they're kind of helping to create the book in a way that, you know, I might not have thought about this issue, you know, or this perspective. So as people ask me questions, I can help to, you know, co-create that book. And so I'm in the process of that currently, and it's scheduled to be finished in 4 months, which is, what is today's date? Are we middle of March? So close to June, July it should be finished, the draft of the book, and then going to the publishers, it'll be another 6 months before it's out in the shelves. But that's the process. So if they want to participate, they can go to my website and sign up for my newsletter, and then I let people know they can join the teleclass, which is every other Sunday at 2 o'clock Pacific Standard Time. So it doesn't interfere with your time slot.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fun. It's really great. And it's wonderful to have that transcribed and then to make it into the chapters of the book so they can be part of the making of it. And last week I spoke on overcoming resistance to change, because change is such a tremendous part of what everyone's dealing with right now. And that's going to be a whole section of the book, you know, on solutions. It is going to be about how to work with change. And we can talk a little bit about that, too, if you'd like, because there's some really good nuggets that I can help people with that have helped me over the years understand about the nature of change. So that's kind of how people can get in touch with me. And if they sign up for my newsletter, I send out solution quotes every about twice a week. I don't do it every day. I send it about twice a week, and then a newsletter once a month. So that's the best way to reach me.
Okay, and then the book, if they want to get the book.
Well, it'll be available. There'll be many different resources. The book's not out yet, so that's what I mean. The teleclasses, though, like, for instance, if they missed last week, they can download that and listen to Overcoming Resistance to Change. And there'll be different topics each coming every 2 weeks that they can have access to. So the website will help them if they go there to find that. And when the book is ready from the publishers to be distributed, then they'll be available on my website and also through, you know, major distributors throughout the country.
Okay, because it sounds like it's going to be a great book.
Well, thanks.
You know, so we got to make sure that people understand that it may not be out just yet, but they will have a way to, you know, get it just by your website. Now, you wanted to talk about resistance,
mm-hmm.
And I agree. People have the hardest time making changes because I do my counseling with them, that is one of the hardest things when I tell people, you know, something here needs to have a little change to it, and they look at me like, what? You're expecting me to make a change. So, yes, I think that would be pretty helpful for the listeners.
Well, good. And I totally agree, you know, for myself. I couldn't figure out because, you know, I wanted to change as a kid and growing up, and I wanted to be different. You know, I felt that very strongly, but I kept having the resistance and the procrastination and the self-punishment that comes out of not changing. But what I discovered, and one of the first secrets that I teach people when they're trying to make a change in their life, and this has helped me so much, is understanding that all change, no matter how big, no matter how small, all change, whether it's positive or negative, all change produces chaos. And so our soul, our spirit wants to grow and evolve and change, but our ego resists the chaos. And if we can change the way we relate to chaos, if we can change and mature our relationship with chaos, we can make changes so much more elegantly and smoothly in our life. You know, whether you're getting married or getting divorced or getting a new, you know, being hired for a new job or losing your job, that all produces chaos.
Mm-hmm.
And the unknown and the unfamiliar and chaos is uncomfortable. You know, a big part of society is structured to avoid chaos. You know, and people are terrified of chaos. And this is what I teach people, that your relationship to chaos, what you bring, how you relate to chaos and what you bring into chaos affects the outcome of change. Now, what I mean by that is, if I bring my fear, if I bring my powerlessness into my relationship with chaos, into this change that's happening into my life, you know, if I'm feeling powerless and I'm feeling fearful, then that's going to influence the chaos to precipitate and to form and to create more of a negative change. But if I can deal with my fear, release my fear, and bring hope, bring joy, bring freedom, bring something of a positive energy into that chaos, it can lift that energy of chaos into creating a positive change. It directs and harnesses the flow of change. So the way I relate to chaos is one of the biggest secrets. And if I can be conscious of that and realize, okay, I'm going to feel chaos when I'm dealing with even rearranging your living room. You ever do that? You ever pull everything down and you're like, you start feeling, oh my God, where's everything going to fit? And you feel the chaos. It's there. And depending on how big the change is, depends on the intensity of the chaos. The bigger the change, the more the chaos. The littler the change, the less. So being conscious and aware of that is so valuable because everybody wants to change. You know, like you said, everyone wants to. But there's a part of us that also resists. It's like a tug of war. You know, I'm reaching for change, at the same time I'm recoiling from it. And if we can realize, what am I recoiling from? It's not the change. It's the chaos that I have to go through to get there. And I can change the way I relate to chaos. And I can start to trust myself and bring that energy of trust and hope and hold the vision of the outcome of what I want to happen. You know, a lot of people, it's easier to imagine fear. You know, fear is easier to imagine for most people. What could go wrong is easier to imagine than what could go right. And so there is a challenge there to hold the outcome of what you want and to create that. But it's really that secret is so powerful for people. And it's one of four secrets that I spoke of last week. And it's available, it'll be available on my website as a download for them to listen to as well. But that I think is very helpful. And have you understood that or related to that before in your own teachings with chaos and change?
All the time.
Yeah.
All the time. And so, you know, because what I find, Michael, is that people, they would rather stay very uncomfortable where they're at, because at least they know where that is, rather than try to make a change to see what the positive energy out there could create for themselves. And it's really, you know, people, when you talk about change, it's like they have been so programmed that nothing is going to be any better. And it's like that's got to get out of their head, because if they stay programmed like that, they're right. It is not going to get any better. And so it's real important that people know that change is so very important.
Exactly. And it is inevitable. You know, it's like I either am going to participate with evolving and growing. You know, and that's another secret. I tell people to focus on growth, not on change. So how is this a growth choice? Is this helping me become more of myself? Or is this a change that I'm thinking about doing, not a fear choice? Is it based on fear? And, yeah, it's like if I can understand that change is something that I can embrace and I can move towards and that I can participate in, it's going to happen. You know, change happens. And oftentimes we are forced into change when we don't participate. You know, the soul wants to grow and evolve. And it's oftentimes when we ignore and deny it, it's only through crisis that we wake up and that we change. But it's not the way the soul wants to work with us. It doesn't want to use crisis, but it won't be denied. It'll eventually, you know, the dark night of the soul, when we deny it and deny it and paint ourselves into the corner, eventually it's going to create a crisis, a health issue, a crisis, to get you back into alignment, to get you back, hopefully, it hopes that it'll get you back into alignment, to look at your priorities, at what really matters in your life. And so the soul is a big part of change. And the soul loves chaos. You know, joy is a chaotic energy. Excitement is chaotic energy in a positive sense. And anxiety is chaotic in a negative sense. So we're feeling these things, but I can change that negative chaos into a positive chaos. And oftentimes within anxiety, if I can go into that anxiety and feel it and release the fear, I can lift that energy into a much higher vibration, into a more exciting vibration, and change the resonance of myself and what I want to create. So yeah, that change is really important right now in our world, and I'm looking forward to bringing more information about that for people to work with, because I think it's timely at this time.
Another thing people have a really hard time with, and especially today, is their anger. You know, they're angry. The world is angry, and it's like, okay, how did we get so angry?
Yeah. Well, you know, when I talk about emotions, one of the things that's so important, most people see anger as a negative emotion, but I don't define emotions by their labels. In other words, negative and positive emotions are often seen as, you know, joy and love and peace is positive, and anger and fear and guilt is negative. But it's really my relationship, how I relate to all of my emotions, that determines whether they're positive or negative. And what I mean by that is any emotion that I'm willing to feel, seek to understand, to express, and to release can become a positive emotion. And likewise, any emotion that I ignore and deny and repress becomes negative. So what that means is that love that I ignore, love that I deny, love that I repress can be just as destructive as anger. But most people don't see it that way. They think, oh, because it says love, that it's positive. No, it's my relationship to my emotions, my relationship to love, and my relationship to anger. Anger that I feel and I understand and I express and release appropriately is very constructive. It creates amazing change. So yeah, the anger in the world is surfacing, and it's a good thing in a way that people are starting to feel something, you know, rather than feel angry than to feel apathy, you know. Apathy is the most destructive emotion, because at least you can work with something. When people are angry, they're feeling something, and it's also saying that this has got to change. You know, people are angry because the world needs to change, and people are feeling that. But, and I've often said to people, you know, anger has never, ever hurt anyone. And people say, what? Their eyebrows raises, you know, gets raised. No, it's repressed anger that hurts a lot of people. It's the repression of my anger that builds and builds and builds, and I collect it and collect it, and then something happens and I get angry and I trigger, and then this avalanche of anger comes out. You know, it's the repression that creates the negativity, not the anger. Anger can be clean when it's felt and expressed and released like a little child. You know, they get angry and then the next minute they're fine. They're free and they're happy and they're singing again. Because they don't have this weight and this attachment to all the anger that they've built up for decades sometimes. So it's a repression of any emotion, even love, that's repressed, you know, can clog the heart. Heart attacks in men are often issues of receiving love and letting love in. And so, you know, so my relationship to my emotions, how I relate to them, that determines their being positive or negative. And that's very liberating in a lot of way, because especially in the new age when people think, you know, that being positive is about only feeling certain feelings. To me, positive living, you know, positive thinking, there's a paradox there. Because when you deny your emotions, your anger and your fear or your hurt in the name of being positive, they're still inside of me vibrating and attracting my reality. So it's creating negativity in my life, whether I ignore it or deal with it. And if I can, you know, understand that positive, the most positive thing I can do is to be honest with how I feel. To me, that's the most positive way to be, is if I'm honestly angry about something, I'm going to take responsibility for that and feel it and work through that and express that anger by writing it out or talking to a friend or a therapist or getting that stuff out of me and then releasing it, letting it go. You know, it is so important. And that being honest to me, people always say to me, you know, especially when I do private sessions, well, I'm just trying to be positive about the future. I'm just trying to be positive. I said, well, before you do that, talk about your fear. Let's get that stuff out of you.
Put that in there too.
Let's move through some of that resonance so that that's out of the way, you know, so that, that's no longer tainting your, quote, positive attempts. Because it's natural to feel fear, you know, especially with change or with anything that, you know, to me, a real opportunity always involves some fear. You know, for instance, love. The more you love someone, the more you love something, what increases behind it is its shadow called the fear of losing that. And the more you love someone, the more you're afraid of losing them. But most people let that fear rule their life rather than the love, you know, and letting the love then come from a place of love to deal with that fear and then to move beyond it to get back to the love. So, yeah, the anger is coming up in our world, and it's because people want change, you know, and they're angry at what has happened. They're angry maybe at themselves. They project that onto other people, their lack of responsibility, you know, the economic situation of our world right now. It's a lot of anger, which is also a sign that a lot of change can come out of that anger if it's dealt with responsibly and if love is brought in, you know. And what I mean by that is, you know, how do you love from a place of anger? Well, love seeks to understand. It's one thing that, you know, when you love somebody, you seek to understand them. When you love a project or you love a creative idea, you seek to understand more. So to understand your anger and not to apologize for feeling it or not to feel embarrassed to have it, but to understand that, you know, something has to change in my life and I'm angry at the way things are, and I can move through that to make those changes. There's a tremendous amount of willpower within our anger. You know, within our anger is tremendous willpower. And I have an article on my website called Transforming Anger into Willpower. So there's a good process on how to work through your emotions through anger so that you can make positive changes in your life. And I highly recommend people who are interested or feel that they might have anger, and everyone does. But whether they feel it is another story. Everyone has it, but whether they feel it.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing that everybody has is fear. You know, everybody has that, and like you said, it kind of equates to how do I handle that? You know, people who stay living in fear have a very tough time moving forward, where somebody who is going to try to move through it, even though they're still nervous about it, but have a better outlook on it, usually it turns out much better, and you end up getting rid of that fear.
Mm-hmm. And fear thrives on ignorance, which is to ignore it. You know, people ignore their fears. They're so afraid. Well, I don't want to be negative by thinking or feeling my fear. Well, you are, if you're going to ignore and deny your fear, because that means your fear is going to run your life. You know, but if you can grab hold of it and change it and transform it and move beyond it, then you're doing the most positive thing. And absolutely, any real opportunity has fear involved in it. And that's important, you know, getting married or starting a new job, anything that's a real opportunity. If it's not, if there's no fear, if you're not feeling any fear at all, then it's really probably not a good opportunity for you. I tell people that.
It won't turn out right either.
Yeah, or it's a fantasy. It's not real, you know. It's like there's no fear at all. And it's like the challenge of our spiritual growth is to love in spite of fear, to go back to love and to, you know, make love the place we come from. And the way to love through the fear is to seek to understand it and to know that love is the answer that will transform that fear and can turn things around. And it's not about not having fear. It's about what do I do with it? Do I run from it and give it my power and hide and, you know, repress myself? Or do I recognize it and say, no, I'm going to deal with this fear and I'm going to change it. I'm going to get beyond it. I'm more powerful than my fear. So it is challenging and it's not always comfortable, but, you know, it's one of those things that we signed up for, being physical beings. You got to deal with it.
Yeah, people forget all the things that we actually signed up for somewhere down the line.
Yeah,
the other biggie that people really have, they have a hard time with, and I think it's really important, is that forgiveness thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, forgiveness is a big part of emotional healing. And, you know, if you think about what Jesus taught in the Bible, it was forgiveness, forgiveness, forgiveness. I mean, it's such a powerful resource. And see, what people don't realize is that it's not an ego quality. Mm-hmm. The ego doesn't know how to forgive. The soul does. And so ego or forgiveness is a function of the soul. Compassion, understanding, forgiveness is a function of the soul. And that's what Jesus was all about, helping remind people there's a better way to deal with your life. Don't let your ego. Ego wants revenge. Ego wants an eye for an eye, you know, all that stuff. But the secret to forgiveness, you know, as I mentioned earlier about the ego, it's about getting. Life to the ego is about getting. So it stands for getting. And I use this specifically. It's about forgetting. Forgetting yourself, forgetting your soul, forgetting who you really are. And the soul is about love. It's about compassion. It's about giving. The soul is forgiving. It's about giving and forgiveness and understanding. And the thing that most people don't realize is that they have to really forgive themselves first before they can forgive others. They say, well, I have nothing wrong. They did it to me. It's not me. But you attracted them into your life. You created this experience, maybe not by causing. You didn't go out and, you know, make it happen, but you did attract it. You know, if you were in a car accident, you attracted it. You were at that intersection at that time, you know, which most people don't want to admit. So the first step is to forgive yourself, to understand, why did I create this? Why did I allow this? You know, and to forgive myself, and then to extend forgiveness to others. And the key that has helped me with that, Nancy, was that it's really not about the form. It's not what they did that I need to forgive. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, I don't need to forgive what they did. Like if you were abused as a child and, you know, the beating and the abuse that your uncle or father did to you, it's not about forgiving what they did. That's the illusion. It's about forgiving why they did it. And that what that means is why, what was their motive? What were they doing? What happened to them in their childhood? What made them into that monster? To understand the why they became that way, to seek to understand it. Even if they're dead and long gone, to seek, something must have happened. It's not human nature to be cruel. It's not human nature to be a monster. So So something had to happen to them that caused them to shut down and to become that way. And if I can seek to understand that, and I can forgive why they did what they did,
mm-hmm.
rather than the issues of the what, you know, that can help to unhook that and set the forgiveness process into motion. You know, the physical world is the illusion, and bruises and things, they heal and they mend, but it's the emotional scars that are eternal, the emotion in that anger and resentment or hurt or bitterness inside of us towards that person that's hurting us, you know. Mm-hmm. So if anything else I need to forgive is that I'm hurting myself by not forgiving, by not understanding and letting go. I'm holding on to that resentment, and that's causing me pain, and that's limiting my ability to receive love. So the key to self-forgiveness is really important, and that's helped a lot. It helped me a lot, and it's helped others, you know, realize that, yeah, let me forgive myself. Then I can, as I move through my anger, as I move through and vent and release all of that stuff about the issue, then I can get into a place of understanding and forgiving the why they did what they did, and then eventually letting it go. So it takes a little bit of time.
Mm-hmm. And it does. And people just, I mean, we're in a society that wants instant gratification, instant results.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people have a really, really hard time, you know, not realizing that it did not take them 2 seconds to get where they are, probably. And it's, you know, it's not going to necessarily take 2 seconds to get rid of it. It takes their work, and it takes them to do their part. Because, I mean, you can sit, Michael, and you can tell people all day long all this great stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But if they don't do their part, you know, it's not necessarily going to turn out the way they want. And then they go, oh, that doesn't work.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's a process, and it does take time. But I think also just shifting people's perspective, you know,
mm-hmm.
shifting their perception is a big part of what I do. You know, just as the example of the soul and the spirit, and to realize, okay, that's very ambiguous. You know, there's nothing to grab hold of there. But when I can deal with and understand the value of my imagination, which I call that the common sense is imagination. Because, you know, everybody can see, has eyesight and hearing, but that can be lost. You can lose your hearing. You can lose your eyesight. But your imagination you never lose. In order to be physical, you have to have an imagination. It's the common sense to all of us. And if we can understand and value that that's a way the soul can communicate, then it doesn't have to create crisis to get through to us. It doesn't have to, you know, go through the dark night of the soul. And so, yes, shifting people's perspective is what I do. I mean, it's really what I do. I don't heal people. I create an environment where they can heal themselves. And I do my best to help them shift their perspective from the ego, which is, again, very limited, into a greater perspective of their soul. And I know they have that capacity because I know they have a soul if they're talking to me.
Yeah, that would be true.
Yeah.
Now,
so,
Michael, give out your website again, please, so people can,
sure.
you know, take a look at it.
Yeah, I've got some really amazing guided meditation CDs, and they're on my website, relaxationmeditations.com. And the goal of all of my meditations, again, is to help people to reconnect with their inner world. You know, meditation, for a lot of people, meditation is boring. You know, it's like, oh, I've got to meditate, try to keep quiet and keep my mind from thinking. And, like, your brain is geared to think, so it's not really about stopping yourself from thinking. It's about slowing it down, so that there's space in between each thought. And in that space, your soul can communicate to you. You can have a flash of insight or a gestalt of awareness or, you know, a solution can drop into a problem that you're dealing with. So my meditations are about connecting with your soul and to slow yourself down, you know, to shift from the outer world to your inner world of creativity and imagination. And they're guided. So I guide people along with background music, and people really enjoy them. They're not boring. You know, they're a little more active than passive meditation. And there's value in both. There's obviously value in just being still and being quiet and reconnecting. But, yeah, my meditation CDs, the rainbow meditation is very powerful for healing and change, and it works with the chakra centers. And there's lots of others there that people can take a look at if they're interested. Actually, I just came out with a new one called Overcoming Resistance to Change, which is a meditation people can work with to kind of embrace chaos a little better. And that's now available on the website as well.
It's good. Now, also on your website, Michael, you have 4 qualities of lucky people, because everybody sits around and goes, oh, I don't have any luck. Oh, I don't have this. Oh, uh-huh. I don't have that. I must not be lucky. That other person over there, they're making $200,000 a year. Clear, they're so lucky.
Yeah. Yeah, luck is I wrote that article about, I guess it was last spring. It's been almost a year ago, and it's fun. It's a fun article. It helps a lot of people because it deals with good fortune, and how you think and how you approach life is such a big part of what makes people, the term luck come into place. But there really is no such thing as luck. It's you create your own reality, bottom line.
Mm-hmm.
But when people love themselves enough, when people are open to receiving good in their life, Where they're comfortable receiving, from life, they also let good things come in from the spirit realm, from synchronicity, from coincidence. And that's really what it's about. The unlucky person is a person who has issues with receiving love, has issues with mm-hmm. believing that life can be easy. We're so, it's such a struggle mentality in our consciousness as a collective humanity that in order for something to be valuable, I have to struggle. Right? I mean, isn't that really how we try to get value? The ego tries to get value is through struggle. It's like, if it came easily and it just drops into your lap, it's like, oh, I feel guilty. I didn't do anything to make this happen. But the ego's attempt at trying to be valuable is to struggle. Look how hard I worked. Look how much I suffered. Look what I did and went through. And boy, aren't I valuable is what I'm trying to tell myself. And if you can realize, if I can just shift from saying, I'm going to start valuing ease and freedom and love and knowing that life is a gift. Life is a gift from God, Goddess, and it's us. Our challenge is to learn to receive that gift instead of having to earn it or prove it or make it happen. The ego has to do all that. And when you can connect with your soul, you can receive that love through your soul, and life becomes more magical. Life becomes more easy and lucky, in that term.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I did some research, and it's a fun article. I just released it for St. Patrick's Day again, and it's a fun article. So if anybody wants to read it, it's at the website as well.
Okay. Do you think that the intuition part of a person really, really is very important?
Oh, totally. Absolutely. And, intuition is something that is an innate ability that we have. One of the things that we had much stronger when we were more like human animals before we became human beings, in many ways people ask about the ego and why is it there, and I tell them that part of the reason we have an ego is that we don't have instinct like animals do.
Mm-hmm.
The instinct protects animals. They don't, animals don't have egos. They don't. I mean, I saw the funniest bumper sticker last week, and I had to laugh out loud. It said, "Lord, help me become the person my dog thinks I am."
That's cute.
Isn't that true? Help me become the person my dog thinks I am. The dog is never in a bad mood when you come home. It's just always so full of love, and that's, that pure, loving being, that consciousness. But the ego that comes in is part of why we have one is because we don't have the instincts of the animal, and it's there to protect us. But I lost my train of thought. Where was the question?
Intuition.
Yeah. So intuition is, again, we had it much stronger when we were the human animal. But as human beings, and the ego relates to the outside world, again, the five senses, it denies intuition, which comes from our soul and our spirit. And, people develop, you can develop your intuition, and the best way I tell people is to start using that imagination. Start getting involved with your imagination. The imagination is the lens through which your soul communicates, through which your spirit guides can communicate to you. And you know that, obviously, in your line of work, that without an imagination, you couldn't predict or understand anything. It's like everything comes through that portal.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where intuition needs is a vivid imagination. The more imaginative you can be, the stronger your intuition can become, I believe.
Oh, I think so, too. I tell people, really, daydream. Let yourself go. Daydream. See what's there. Listen to what it's telling you. Just daydream. Don't do it while you're driving, but daydream. Anytime you get a chance, if you're sitting at your desk at work and you're a little bored, just daydream a little bit. You'll come right back down, and you'll be so much more, refreshing and feel so much better.
Absolutely. And a lot of people think that, imagination is visualization. And it's not. You know, mm-hmm. some people don't visualize well. But imagination is all of your inner senses. You know, it's your inner sense of smell. To imagine right now smelling a gardenia.
Mm-hmm.
In your mind, you can smell the gardenia. You know, to imagine through touch the soft velvet, to imagine taste, to imagine the taste of whatever, you know, that you'd like to imagine. But imagination is all of your inner senses. It's not just your ability to visualize. And people often use visualization and imagination, and they think, if I don't visualize well, then I can't imagine. Well, no, you can use those other senses. You know, imagine yourself, how does it feel to be in love? Imagine those things. Imagination is such a powerful resource. And you don't need to be limited by your lack of visualizing. And actually, as you develop the other senses imaginatively, that visualization will start to come into place. And
mm-hmm.
back to when I got started and how I value meditation so much and why I do, is I was probably 18, and I created a safe place. I went to a meditation seminar, and you know how you create a safe place in your mind to go to. And it's this beautiful hot spring in the middle of a meadow, and it's at my favorite time of day, which is twilight. Well, what happened when I was to go there to chill out and to relax in my mind, to rejuvenate myself, is that all of a sudden I went there. You know, you start visualizing what you're doing, and you kind of create this safe place, and you go back to it many times. It becomes easier to visualize. Well, once you have created that in your imaginal realm, then all of a sudden imagination begins to imagine itself. And that's when the magic of meditation comes in. When I would go and sit there, like for instance, one time somebody asked me back then, what is your spirit animal? And I'm like, I don't know. You know? I was like 18, I'm like, well, what is that? And you know, I was learning about it. Well, I went into meditation, not even thinking about that. You know, like a couple days later, I went into a meditation, and I sat into the hot spring where I always sit in my mind, and I just opened up and felt the beauty. And all of a sudden, this owl flies in and lands on the rock. And I'm like, I didn't sit and think, visualize owl. You know? It just spontaneously imagined, my imagination spontaneously. And I was like, oh, my God, that's my spirit animal. You know, it just, I asked for the answer. You know, I was curious, wondered what it is. And it came
mm-hmm.
to me. And I didn't even, that wasn't even the intention of the meditation. I wasn't, okay, I'm going to meditate to find out what my spirit animal was. But it just happened spontaneously because I was curious. My soul brought that as a gift. So imagination can imagine itself, and creativity can create itself when you, and that's what that power is of the mind and the imagination. And meditation is such an incredible way to connect with yourself on a deeper level. And I mean, of all the different teachers and speakers that are into self-empowerment, if you were to have them single out one of the most important parts of their spiritual practice or their what changed their life, meditation is probably definitely the top three things that they've learned
mm-hmm.
that had impact in their life. Would you agree?
Oh, definitely. You know, without a doubt, Michael, I think, you know, meditation is real important. And like you said, you don't have to sit there for hours and hours to do this. It's not, you know,
mm-hmm.
that length of time as much as how you relax and allow time.
Yeah. And just to learn to disconnect, to turn off the noise from the outside world. You know, our five senses take in so much all the time, and that's why people are so attention deficit. It's all their attention is outside of them. It's out into the world. And if they can draw that attention back in, pull that back in, you know, into their inner world, they can become so much more centered and balanced. And kids today, you know, ADD, big issue. So much being out there. You know, attention is psychic energy. It's where you put your attention, what you, quote, pay attention to, is, you know, out there. And it's a power that you give away. You know, it's a power to place your attention in your inner realm, to draw your attention inwards. And I think the number one reason most people resist it, meditation, is that when you start turning inward, the first thing you're going to start to become conscious of is your feelings.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and people have some unresolved anger and hurt and pain. And so they resist disconnecting from the outside world and going into their inner world because then they have to kind of feel some uncomfortability at first. But once they can do that and clear that out, then they can discover a whole new arena within themselves to change and to grow and to evolve. It's going to be so, so magical and powerful.
It's going to be wonderful, actually, as it continues. Now, Michael, before we're just about done, can you give out your website again, please?
Oh, certainly. It's www.relaxationmeditations.com. And I am going to be, I'm developing another website for the book, but also as a resource for people to access information. I've never believed in alternative therapies. I believe in conjunctive.
Mm-hmm.
And that means that you use the best of both worlds. The traditional therapies is not bad. It's only when you use it as your only resource that it can be, limiting. But conjunctive therapy is, doing what you need to do traditionally to take care of yourself physically and going to the doctor, doing things like that, but also to add the metaphysical, also to add the visualization and the processing of emotion and the healing. So I'm developing a website called mysolutions.com. It's my with soul, S-O-U-L, dash, Utions.com, and that will be available through my other website. And again, that's not up and running yet, but I'm putting content on there. So when people have issues like with migraine headaches, they can go there and learn how to deal with it on a metaphysical level so that they can add that to their daily practice or their medication or whatever they're doing to give people more and more options to empower themselves through their own healing process.
Do you think the biggest part, Michael, is people re-empowering themselves so they can really, be who they are or be all they can be?
Absolutely. That's the key. If you think about what is a parent's job for teaching for their children, they can't protect their child. They can't live their child's life for them. But what a parent can do is to teach children about consequences.
Mm-hmm.
That life is about a series of choices, and each choice has a consequence, and that you have to be responsible for that. So responsibility, such an important part, such an important key to empowering yourself. And most people see responsibility as blame. Who do I blame? I got to blame myself. I got to take, but responsibility is the first step of being powerful. Mm-hmm. Of empowerment is to take responsibility, because any area that you can be responsible for, you can change. The ability to respond is what responsibility is. Your ability to respond. Am I able to respond to my health challenge? Am I able to respond to my relationship issue? And if I can take responsibility, I can change it. And there's also, and here's the thing that is, most people think responsibility is for the negative. But can I also take responsibility for my beauty? Can I take responsibility for my understanding and compassion or my wisdom? Can I take responsibility for being a healing source? Can I be responsible for that's a part of who I am as well, to take responsibility for your strengths, for your powers, as well as for your weaknesses, is what power comes from. And it's so easy to do. Everybody can do it. Everybody has access. And
Michael,
we either use our power or we give it away. Everyone has power, and most people have given it away, and I teach people how to take it back and use it and then to transform their life through that.
Great. One more time for your website, and then we're going to have to go.
I know. I've enjoyed this so much, Nancy. I hope I can come back
sometime
and talk more.
So,
www.relaxationmeditations.com, and I have an 800 number if anybody wants to give me a call, has any questions about any of my meditation CDs. It's 800-898-5468. My name is Michael Patrick Bovines, and it's been such a pleasure connecting with you and your audience, and I look forward to working with you in the future.
Great, Michael. Thank you very much for taking the time to be a guest. It was very, very interesting, and everybody, I'm sure, will go out and check out your whole website because it's got a lot on it, and they really need to take a look at it. So thanks a lot for being on the show. It was great.
God bless you. Take care now.
Me too. Thank you. I'd like to thank you, all the listeners. I hope you all enjoyed it. May God bless all of you. Take care and have a great week. Bye now.